Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
This is a wonderful occasion. I feel very privileged to be here. Thank you so much. A whole day. And look, it's half over already. No sweat at all. It's not easy. It's really not easy. But, gosh, it makes a difference. Not the kind of difference you can exactly say what it is, but a lot of sitting really, really helps. I'm just down from Taos from a week of sitting, and the first couple of days are always so discombobulated. There's so much to do, and nobody knows what to do, and nobody really wants to be there because it's so hard. Everybody gets grumpy, and little by little, everything begins to settle down. It gets more and more quiet. And little by little, some of those hard edges and those blocked places get kind of soft, and people get a little tender with each other and with themselves. And compassion begins to come up by itself. It isn't anything you can make happen except by just sitting quietly for a long, long time. It's really why we do this, if we have a why. Although Kodo Sawaki says, Zazen is good for nothing. Which is what we should keep in mind. But if you think about our life practice, it's about allowing our true nature to arise and live consciously, live in community with everyone. Life is hard, life is rough, and often scary. And the more we can help each other, the more we can understand and have clarity in our lives, the better it is not only for ourselves, but for our world, each of us, our world. Each of us is a world, and we're all a seamless world all together. We have the ability and the power to make a world, the world that we want to see. It's why we practice. The subject of my talks up in Taos. That is a very clever cat. You said the cat might come.
Yes.
She's a dormant kitty.
Yeah. Oh, shame. So up in Taos, we're talking about the Bodhisattva vows all week. Started out with the paramitas and then went on to the vows. And the whole notion of Bodhisattva practice, what it is to take a vow, to live a life of vow, in the way that we do in this practice. I apologize to Robert because he's heard all this before. He was here for the week. Bodhisattva vows are based on the Four Noble Truths, which which is something I didn't know for a long time. They sound a little esoteric, actually, especially the saving all sentient beings. you think, how did they come to express it in that way? But when you think in terms of the Four Noble Truths, the first of which is the fact of suffering, the fact of our life as it is, that Shakyamuni Buddha expressed, and that there are reasons for our suffering. That is our self-clinging that creates the suffering that we endure. And that there's a way out of it, and that the way out of it is something that I will never cease feeling very happy about, because it's so simple. It isn't some glorious promise of, I don't know, golden streets and rainbows or anything like that. It's just that with right understanding, practicing right understanding and right thought and right action and right speech and right livelihood and right action, effort and right mindfulness and right meditation, that's a life. A modest life, a simple life, a humble life, and one that serves. We talk about serving the altar, but actually our life is always serving, and we're always being served. And so this package that Shakyamuni Buddha gave us is the very first teaching, which opened up to us the ability to drop self-clinging and create a life that serves and benefits all of where we are with what we touch and which touches us. So that makes saving all sentient beings a little less horrendous sounding. It does not mean sitting on a high mountain and looking down one's nose at everybody else way down there and feeling sorry for them at all. It means being at one with everyone. There are many different subtle changes and different translations of these four little lines, and I brought you some of them to hear because we have one and we memorized it and now we think we know what it is, but it can be a lot of different things. So I'll tell you what they are just in raw form. The first one, sentient beings are numberless, it's Shu Jo Mu Hen Se Gan Do. Great numbers, multitude. Birth, life, existence, mu is nothing, side boundary border, and then the segan is the same all the way through, and the se is vow, swear, pledge, and gan is vow, prayer, petition. So it's please, 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 I promise, I will, I determine, I focus, I go. And do is to commit. So great numbers, birth, life, nothing, boundary, border, vow, swear, pledge, vow, prayer, petition, commit.
That's fun, isn't it?
Second one is Bon No Mu Jin Se Gan Dan. Trouble, worry, distress, illness, nothing. Endeavor, work for, vow, swear, pledge, vow, prayer, petition, cutting, decision. Trouble, worry. Homon Muryo Se Gan Gaku. This is the Dharma Gates. Light, doctrine, gate, nothing, amount, quantity, vow, swear, pledge, vow, prayer, petition, study, learning. Butsu do mu jo se gan jo. Buddha, roadway, nothing, top best, vow, swear, pledge, vow, prayer, petition, to become. It feels so old this way, doesn't it? You can feel how old it is. It's coming to us from a long, long way away. And it's still alive for us right now, here. So here are some of the English, more slick translations. Being arises and decays, I vow to find no separation. Desire has no root, I vow to sever it. Dharma gates are open, I vow to find a free passage. The way is beyond all words, I vow my life shall speak it. That's kind of complicated. Suffering is pervasive, I vow to end it. Attachments are endless, I vow to release them. Life as it is, I vow to be it. The Buddha way is universal, I vow to awake to it. Myriad beings, I vow to deliver. Endless blind passions, I vow to see clearly. Dharma gates, right here, I vow to enter. The way, just this, I vow to perceive. That's just a few. This is a whole huge page full of them. And this is just a few. The last one that I will share with you is from my teacher, Kobunchino Otagawa. Sentient beings are infinite. They will save themselves. Desires are infinite. They will reach an end by themselves. Dharmas are infinite, so there is learning, study. Buddha's way is no above, so it is always accomplished, allowed. It was based on a teaching of Huineng, the sixth patriarch. I think that's where Kobun got that, because Huineng says just about the same thing. And as always in our practice, if one side comes up, the other side has to be brought up too. So I think it creates a wonderful balance and a wonderful insight for us to carry with us. So sentient beings, of course, means all. It isn't that some things are special, and it used to be that it was all that breathed was a sentient being, anything that was breathing. And then when Dogen came along, he said, He made no distinction at all. That was his his big question for a long time. How can this be? Of course, all beings. All beings. And saving, or salvation, when we hear it and have a Judeo-Christian point of view about that, salvation is to save somebody from hell, from the fires of hell. And it doesn't mean that at all. It's a funny word, that save. And it's not pulling somebody out of a river or anything like that. It's, in fact, in Arcata, their way of saying is, I vow to awaken with them. And we say in Floating Zendo, we vow to be with them. That it's about seamlessly recognizing what's before us as it is before us, what we're with, and acknowledging and enjoying that the with goes both ways, so that there's it's not a connection, it's the reality of things as a whole. Often we meet others, including rocks in our path, with a kick or ignoring or seeing them as objects just to get through or get by. So this is about stopping long enough, even just an instant, to be with what is. As us too. It's really asking us to be our life as it appears, moment by moment, to wake up to it and to respond to it. The second one, the desires sometimes. It's said, that's what Kogan used, and it's really not correct, actually. The Japanese word means delusions, but it's often said as desires. Desires are different from delusions. There are five desires that we talk about when we talk about desire, and they're all survival. Essential survival for the human body and race. Therefore, food, sleep, shelter, sex, and being known by others. Those are the five desires. You really can't get rid of those, any of those. We need a shelter and we need a meal now and then, and all the others. They're basic necessities of us. But the reason they're called desires is because we're never satisfied with a modest amount of any of those. You know, if we have a little cute little cottage, we want a 3,000-foot mansion. You know? And all around us, you see in our culture how if we become... If means become available to us, we begin to cultivate the desires and make more so that our original plate size from many years has gotten very much bigger in the last 10 or so years in restaurants and the ones that they sell because we're eating so much food. We can't cut off or end our desires, but we can certainly pay attention to how we cultivate them and be aware. But delusions are something else, and delusions are all based on the self, the self-clinging, the attachment to ourself as something sort of particular, for one thing, and always the same, sort of fixed entity that we think of as special. So that the sense of self gets in between us and our world, gets between us and the tree that we're standing next to. If there's me and the tree, then it becomes a sort of split situation. And of course, the things that we remember the best are the ones where we've dropped that and we just feel a wonderful at oneness with things. So these tendencies to delude ourselves and protect ourselves is very natural, very common. But it's important to know. And sometimes I think the vow is more about vowing to know rather than to accomplish something. It's like the precepts. We can't keep the precepts. We break them, so-called, all the time. But they wake us. Wake us to where we are and what we're doing, what's happening. So this ability to be with what we're with comes up in the third one too, where Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. I love the image of the gate. It's a very poetic one. To think of each condition, each situation that we're in as a gate through which we pass, a possibility. I think of it when I often think of the Quaker saying, when we're stuck, proceed as way opens. Proceed as the gate opens, because just go through. But sometimes, of course, we can't go through right away. Then we have to sit with it. These Dharma gates remind me of Martin Buber and his teaching of I and thou and I and it. Because if we see something with the mind of it, we see it as a thing, an object, including people. Oh, it's just the checkout person at the counter. Somebody we don't know, we don't want to know, we hardly look at. And that mind, that I of oneself, is a different I from the one who actually is willing to see the checkout person. It's a different I. Buber called it thou, based on the German language, and they had two different U's. We have just one you, but we can feel how that vow changes. That vow of deep respect. Respect meaning willing to see again. Respect. Look again. See what's there. When I first started sitting sesshin, I would sometimes get home and go to the store and get to the checkout counter and find myself oh, wait a minute. You know? But it's so natural, and there's so much gratitude that goes with it. Once we see, you know, we have compassionate service all around us, helping us all the time. Warmth and life all around us. So entering the Dharma gates is being willing to be with the Thou of our life, and to be willing to be a Thou ourselves as we can. And the last one is Buddha's way. Buddha's way is no above, which they all seem to translate more or less. Is not above. I would think it would be better. And Koban's "it's always allowed or accomplished," I like very much. When I first learned it, it was Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to maintain it. And I always used to think of it as a kind of road that you got out and cleared the culverts of and, you know, dug out the ditches and all of that. But then they changed it to, I vow to I guess become it was the next one. And that's that, I think San Francisco Zen Center made that change. And that seems to be pretty much what it means, I vow to embody it. Attain is the second one that I learned. I vow to attain it, which makes it sound like you're going to get somewhere. And that's a misdirection. I had to change that one. Alas, alas. So a vow isn't a promise. We take vows. We take vows when we marry. It's when I marry people, I always assure them that it's not a performance. That when you're emerging in that way as a couple, and being together with everyone in that way, that the vow is a determination of a direction. And in a Buddhist wedding, the direction is the precepts. The couple take the precepts side by side together, so that it's vowing a road or a path. A direction. So there's more light in it somehow. There's more flexibility in it, some more openness.